This is a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. Go to allthews.3cr.org.au.
It's 5 o'clock on Friday afternoon. My name's Jacob.
Well, I must be Mercedes then. And we're on community radio 3CR with Friday Rave.
Yeah, that's right. You're back. It is Friday the 17th and you're listening to Community Radio 3CR. I'm Mercedes and Jake, you're on via the webs.
Yes, I'm on via the web. I'm having a hard time hearing you, but that's okay.
Oh, maybe I can
I'll just try to make things a bit louder, but the buttons are broken on my phone at the moment, so sorry, folks.
Oh, that's handy. Well, we'll try and get by anyway. Now, we will be a bit later in the show, as we said last week, we'll be being joined again. Some listeners might remember a little while ago we had Hookus Bookus join us on a Friday rave, and they'll be joining us on the show a little bit later. But first we want to have a bit of a chat about what's going on in the dastardly world of F-35s.
In the darkly world of the F-35s, mate, it just keeps going on and on. And look, I just want to point out at this to start with that the only place, the first place the F-35s were ever used in war, and so when we first got into this Joint Strike Fighter bullshit 25 years ago, it was about protecting democracy and all the rest of it, you know, the usual palaver. But the first place that the F-35s were used was against the unarmed people of Gaza at the start of the genocide. So these planes, let's face it, are a genocide-enabling plane. That's all there is to it. There's no question, there's no ifs or buts. But the strange thing, now, I also want to talk about a few other things to do with the Australian government, but staying with the F-35s just for a minute. The a report has come out from who are they? The government, the US Government Accountability Office. All right. Now, this is very interesting because, you know, as I say, the FBI, the F-35, it's cost trillions of dollars. It's been sold to 20 countries around the world. Now, and it had so many, it was going to be the bee's knees. There was so much stuff going to be going down with it that no other plane could do. Now, what's happened is that they were supposed to be finished by now, but the Government Accountability Office in the US just a couple of weeks ago released a report that said that the program plans to reduce the scope of Block 4 to deliver capabilities to the warfighter at a more predictable pace than in the past. Now, when you look at what Block 4 was, Block 4 was part of it's not an add-on. It was part of the initial design of the F-35 that they've never been able to get right. Now, don't get me wrong, it is a highly capable killing machine, but it's just not as capable as they told us it was going to be. And particularly, it appears, in their stealth technologies. But who knows? Who knows? But my point is that after spending trillions of dollars on this, the US government is now coming clean and making the really embarrassing statement of a situation of requesting more time and more money from Congress to further develop and research and find out what they need to do to develop the capabilities they told us the F-35 was going to have to start with. It's just an ongoing bucket of money.
Yeah.
And that is a real, real problem. You know, two decades we've been going with this in Australia.
Was it 2006 that Australia first joined
I think it was 06, yeah. Two decades. So it's absolutely, what's the word?
Bullshit.
Unconscionable.
That's,
you know,
better, yeah.
We're looking at a situation where these planes are produced by various parts all around the world, right? Because nobody, not the United States, nobody has the technology and, what's the word, industrial capability to build the things. So they need to get parts from all over the world. Like, regular listeners would know, in Australia, for example, in Melbourne, we have the situation where the Bombay doors are being made in Bayswater. And just by the way, next Thursday, the 23rd of October, there's a protest at Rosebank Engineering in Bayswater. Look that up. It's 836, I think it is, the Mountain Highway.
Yep, that's right. I think that starts four o'clock, I think.
Okay, yeah, and that's Knox for Palestine. So look them up on your social media. That you'll be able to find them. But all the parts, like we spoke last week, or was it the week before, about parts going directly mm-hmm. from Australia to Israel. Or was that last week, mate?
Oh, I think we've spoken about it a few times. But, yeah, I think it must be last week, yeah.
Yeah, but what the situation is that nobody apart from the United States owns parts. So you've got a part that's made in Australia. Before Australia can actually use it, it's got to be sold to the United States, to Lockheed Martin, and then Lockheed Martin needs to send it back to Australia. I mean, the sending is just all paperwork. It never leaves the country, just like they don't go to the United States before they go to Israel.
Mm.
But it basically means that Lockheed Martin controls all the parts for the F-35.
And this is what was spoken about in the, you know, in the Senate estimates last week. When questioned on the F-35s, and this was the response. It's like, well, the Australian government or the Australian army or military doesn't own the parts. All of the parts belong to Lockheed Martin. So, you know, so at the same time that they're using this as an excuse to avoid accountability for complicity in war crimes, they're also just saying, like, all of these parts belong to Lockheed Martin. We actually don't get a say in where they go.
We don't get a say in anything, mate.
Yeah.
And the French intelligence, they claim, and, you know, I'm not the kind of person that takes any intelligence service thing at face value, but the French intelligence service is claiming that that they can't operate them without US authority. Now, we know in the early days that the US sent codes to Israel so we could fly its Adair F-35 fighters.
Mm-hmm.
And what it's looking like is that we cannot even fly these things without US approval, which makes sense, because otherwise Europe and a big part of the rest of the world who have bought these bloody things might actually end up using the US if things don't get any better. All right, so they're not sovereign.
Yeah.
This is the situation that we found ourselves in. The submarines, the aeroplanes, all the technology we're buying from the United States remains dependent on the United States' approval before we can actually use it. Now, I'm not someone who says, you know, who objects to military equipment because I think we should be able to blow whoever the hell we want to blow up. But there is something strange about the way we're spending all this money to have what Albanese and our defence minister, what's his name again? Richard Marles.
Dick Marles.
Is he still the defence minister?
Yeah, he's still a defence minister. Khalil's...
How many fuck-ups does the guy need to make before they sack the prick? Oh, I can't believe it. I go out bush for a couple of weeks and I come back and he's still defence minister. I can't believe it.
Well, it might go the other way. He might be prime minister by the time you come next. He's gunning for it.
Oh, mate. Oh God. Okay.
But yeah, I think I like.
Give me Scott Morrison any day. Give me Scott Morrison any day.
Oh fuck. I think that's you know, when we think about that in the context of interoperability and increasingly interchangeability, it's like this is yeah, already embedded into these decades long programs. Like this is not a new thing. But just before we're joined by Hookers Bookers in a couple of minutes, we did want to talk just briefly about the Labor government put in an amendment bill to FOIs just recently, which would kind of put it in what, you know, a blanket of secrecy around FOIs. And we wanted just to briefly mention that. Jake, you're across that more than I am, but
there was a hearing about it in Parliament House today.
Mm.
And everybody, every crossbencher, the Liberal Party, the Nationals, whatever they call themselves these days, the Greens, all of social society, the NGOs, even government departments, Home Affairs, are opposed to the idea of less government transparency. And so, look, one little thing, I looked at when this was coming out a few weeks ago now, one of the things about the FOI, and Chalmers said he believed that bots were being used to put in ridiculous FOI applications all the time. They were just being done by bots. And I was trying to get my head around how all this worked. So I rang the press number for the Australian Government's Freedom of Information Office, and guess what? I was answered by a fucking bot.
Of course.
How?
Press one for FOIs.
How do they get away with this?
Yeah. I mean, they get away with a lot of shit. Like, you know.
They do.
But it's just the irony is just like slaps you in the face, you know.
It does. And they get away with this, but they need this. You see, here's the thing. The FOI in itself is only a part of the argument, the changes they want to make to freedom of information. The real question is, why do they want to give us less information?
Mm.
And a big part of that is because of all the military stuff. We want to find out what's going on in Israel. Oh, FOI requests. We can't do that. We want to find out which arms companies are getting paid money to do this, that, and the other here. FOI requests. The only way we find out this information is through FOI requests.
Mm.
And they want us to stop having the information.
Yeah.
And not just because not just because they're doing shady deals, but because they're inept, my friend.
Mm. They
keep spending money they haven't got. They announced the same tranche of spending dozens of times. And then the latest thing they've done, and the US government has been trying to get Australia to increase its defence spending from just under 2%, which is where we are, to 3.5%. So what's his name again? His gormlessness. Richard Marnold. The way he deals with that is he redefines what's defence and puts a whole lot of other shit in the defence budget that we've already been spending money on that wasn't previously in the defence budget.
Yes.
Things like superannuation, veterans housing, vet hospitals and all that kind of stuff is now in part of the defence budget. And he's gone, whoa, look at this. We're spending an extra 1.5% more than we were last year.
Mm-hmm.
But we're not.
Yeah.
And it's ridiculous. They because all they're doing is jumping to every request from the major corporations, from the banks and from the US Department of War.
And
they need...
Oh, sorry, I was just going to say, and I think, you know, just on that point, something that we spoke about the other week is that I expect that rare earths will come into that part of that defence budget.
Of course it will.
Yeah.
Course it will. That's probably the next thing they're going
to
do.
Yeah. We might go to a couple of cuts because we're going to be joined by Hookers Bookers in just a moment. So keep it locked. You're tuned to Community Radio 3CR on 855 AM. You're with Jake and Mercedes on a Friday rave. We'll be back in a sec.
3CR is about community, and we welcome your participation at the station.
3CR is open to a wide diversity of volunteers and is a great way to connect with Melbourne's activist community.
Have you ever thought about volunteering, doing a reception shift, getting a program on air,
training in radio skills, or contributing to one of the station's committees?
There are many ways to be involved at 3CR.
To find out more, go to 3cr.org.au and get in touch.
Hopefully we can protect everything that's worth protecting on country and keep all warmongers out.
Well, I won't back down.
Gugatha elder Aunty Sue Hasseldine is fighting to protect her country from Southern Launch's rocket testing range. Southern Launch's collaborations with international weapons companies such as Thales, as well as the Australian Defence Force, are threatening sacred sites, endangered animals and unique ecosystems. Join West Mallee Protection this Saturday, the 18th of October, at Black Spark for a letter-writing session calling on key decision-makers to get Southern Launch off Gugatha country. From 1 to 5pm at 126A Gladstone Avenue, Northcote. For more information, visit West Mallee Protection on Instagram. West Mallee Protection is a 3CR supporter.
And that's right, tomorrow afternoon, West Mallee Protection letter writing is happening, but there's also something else happening. Tomorrow afternoon, we're joined by Hookus Bookus to give us an update on what's happening in Kashmir. Thanks again for coming on Friday Rave.
Thanks so much for inviting me again.
And
mate, before we get into the film, every now and then, Kashmir suddenly—I mean, unless you're looking at it full time, which I must admit I'm not—every now and then you open the web and you go to your various news sources and you see, shit, Kashmir's blowing up again. Protests all over the place, police on the streets, people being shot. What's happened in the last few weeks?
So at the moment, people in Ladakh are protesting. Ladakh has been quite peaceful since 1948, but this time the people of Ladakh are protesting because they do not want any investments from Indians in Ladakh, because they think it is getting in their indigenous way of being. They are not able to protect their glaciers. They are not able to protect their indigenous way of being. They are not able to protect their mountains, because now there is huge construction in the mountains to make it tourist friendly, to construct more hotels. And therefore, they think that they are losing Ladakh, because Ladakh has quite less population. It's around less than 200,000 people in Ladakh. And for them, it's really difficult to counter, you know, tourism at this scale, which India is trying to, you know, do in Ladakh. And at the same time, because there is a project by Adani, and Adani is trying to harness the solar energy, because Ladakh is good for that in terms of its altitude. It's like highest place on earth. So therefore, what Adani is trying to do, he is trying to capture vast tracts of land in Ladakh to harness solar energy and then create electricity for North India and for, you know, mainland India. So that's why Ladakhis are protesting, and they were protesting. There was hunger strike in Ladakh for a very long time. For like 3 or 4 years, they have been going on these hunger strikes every now and then. This time there was hunger strike by their most popular activist and scientist, Sonam Wangchuk, and because people thought that he's going to die, so obviously they made it, they made them, you know, choose the path of violence, and therefore there were violent protests erupted, and then they arrested Sonam Wangchuk, citing Pakistani links when there are no sympathy, when there's no sympathy for Pakistan in Ladakh, just, you know, to quell the protests, just to end the protests. So this is what's happening in Ladakh. But at the same time, on the other part, like, you know, in Azad Kashmir, which is held by Pakistan, there are protests again, because they had huge subsidies from the Pakistani government due to Indus Water Treaty. And this was what India and Pakistan initially did to keep Kashmiri population happy. They gave them subsidies on food, like wheat and, you know, electricity as well, and on rice and other things. But now, learning from India, Pakistan has also removed these subsidies and causing economic turmoil in Kashmir. So they are basically fighting for their political, to have their political and economic subjectivity recognized. So this is what the protest is about. It is about protest, you know, it's about permanent sovereignty over the natural resources in all parts of Kashmir, including in
occupied. And in the Pakistan-controlled Kashmir, I believe the power is actually produced in Kashmir. It's not like they're buying it in from the rest of Pakistan.
Yes, I mean, when it comes to electricity, so there is Indus Water Treaty. So during the recent skirmishes between India and Pakistan, which killed basically tens of people in Kashmir, 31 in Pakistan-held Kashmir and 11 in Indian-occupied Kashmir. So basically what happened was that India suspended Indus Water Treaty. So now Indus Water Treaty is basically a bilateral treaty between India and Pakistan brokered by the World Bank. And this treaty basically uses three rivers that originate and flow from Jammu and Kashmir to, like, you know, between two of them. And so Pakistan can mostly use this energy. So therefore, you know, to use this water at the cost of the Kashmiris not being able to use this water for themselves, either for irrigation or flood control or hydroelectricity, so Pakistan gave them subsidies. But now India has unilaterally sort of revoked Indus Water Treaty, so keep, you know, putting pressure on Pakistan. So there is a lot of, you know, things happening between these two countries, which actually have a huge impact mostly on the people of Jammu and Kashmir. So yes, the electricity for Pakistan mostly comes from these hydroelectric projects. So yes, they are taking it and selling it for their own benefit.
And all this, of course, leads to a massive diaspora of Kashmiris to places like Australia, the United Kingdom, Canada, the United States. And that's the subject of the film, I believe, you're going to let us know about.
Yes, there's a large diaspora in United States, in not so much in Australia, but in United Kingdom. And a lot of people, particularly from occupied Kashmir, are trying to come out after autonomy was abrogated in 2019 because there's no government, there are no jobs. The joblessness, the unemployment is right now at more than 50% in Kashmir, while as in 2019, it was around 19%. So that's why people are trying to come out, and those who speak about these issues, not even occupation, but just these issues, like basic issues with respect to employment and other things, you know, their passports are revoked and then they are imprisoned and they are detained and, you know, preventive detention laws are imposed on them. So that's why there is a massive immigration happening in Kashmir at the moment. So that's why this film is even important, because this film actually tracks three generations of Kashmiris, including a generation of diaspora Kashmiri, and how they process their trauma because of the Indian occupation in Kashmir. And the movie is by Sheikh Arafat, the director of the movie, the writer of the movie, whose father was abducted and he disappeared while in the Indian custody, was a singer. And that's why Arafat actually, you know, it's a sort of a biographical, movie at the same time, but also borrows from what has happened in Kashmir. So this movie particularly is important at this stage because there is also a lot of propaganda done by Bollywood against Kashmir. Every film has Kashmir, particularly after 2019, to show to Indian populace that Kashmir is the ruins of war that they have gotten, you know, after 2019, to make them happy. So there's a lot of propaganda. And that's why Sheikh Arafat, in his own words, says that he seeks to take that agency back from Bollywood to be able to tell our stories ourselves. And that's why this movie is important. And if your viewers are listening to me at this time, I would like them to come to the Cinema Nova tomorrow in Carlton. The movie will start at 2:30. We will be also able to sell tickets at the registration desk from 1:30 p.m. onwards. And the hall number is hall number 4. So we'll be happy to have as many people as, in the cinema tomorrow.
Yeah.
Terrific.
And that film is called Saffron Kingdom. I think that we have been speaking about it. It's Saffron Kingdom tomorrow at Nova Cinema. And I guess, in talking about...
Is that the only chance? Because 2:30 on a Friday afternoon, I imagine it's hard for some people, workers, school kids, students to get to. 230. Are there plans to try to get it to a wider screening?
Yes, we are hoping to do more screenings, but depending on if we are able to raise funds, because we did a small screening, private screening, through which we were able to raise funds. We did it at IPCS, and we collected the money to be able to pay to Cinema Nova and have a movie screening. And if your listeners, I would appeal to them that if anyone is interested in helping us do more screenings, we are happy to do more screenings in Melbourne or anywhere in Australia. So if they can get in touch with you, and we can make it happen.
Absolutely. And the film's called Saffron Kingdom, and I believe people can go. There's a website and the name of the film studio where people can follow to find out more about the film, or for listeners not just based here in Melbourne, but also, you know, in other places where there might be an opportunity for people to get in touch. How do people, because I guess, you know, this is an important part of like having the agency, and it's a part of Kashmiri self-determination in telling these stories, encountering that propaganda. And so it's important that these stories get out there, you know.
Yes, you can follow basically... Yeah. Daffodil Studios, Melbourne, Daffodil Studios Australia, or generally Daffodil Studios on Twitter, on Instagram and Facebook, and you will have all the updates from all over the world about, you know, the screenings, about what they are doing, the awards that they won, because basically in 2024, they also won Melbourne Independent Best Feature Film in 2024. So you will be able to find all the information. It's a great watch. It's a great story about Kashmir, the conflict and the trauma and the intergenerational trauma of
And I want to say, just in the minute or so we've got left, that I had a look at the trailer for it, which I found on the web, and it struck me, and that of course it's about Kashmir, but it's not just about Kashmir. It's about displaced people everywhere, and what a lot of people, I imagine a lot of Palestinians would be able to relate to this, as well as a whole lot of other people who have had to leave their homelands because of all the theft of resources and exploitation that's taking place by other nations.
Yes, I agree. I mean, because we always say from Kashmir to Palestine, occupation is a crime. So Palestinians will be able to relate with us the way we relate with them, because it's almost the same problem. It's people from all occupied territories. It's every displaced people from every part of the world can come and relate with this movie, because the tools of the occupation, the tools of colonization are the same. And our struggles are also shared in terms of we want control over our lands, over our lives. So I think it is about Kashmir, but it's also about all the displaced people.
All right, sorry to interrupt, but we've just about run out of time there, haven't we, Mercedes?
We have indeed. So, yeah, get down to Nova Cinema tomorrow from about 1:20 for registration and get on to see this incredible film. Hookers Bookers, thanks for joining us on a Friday rave.
More next week.
And more next week. Stay tuned for Slacker Radio.